Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the upcoming Outlander series or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 38 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. So announcements this week. We got a couple new pictures. I think they're pretty steady at like two pictures a week now, from what I've noticed. We've been doing two pictures, I think, for the last few weeks at least. It's been at least two pictures. But this week we had two pictures. The first they gave us was a picture of a dog, and I believe they said that Outlander loves their dogs or something along those lines. We love our castle dogs is what it says. And it kind of looks like a shorn Irish Terrier. I suppose we could wait for confirmation from the set, but I'm kind of confused because when I think of terriers, I think of very hairy animals, and I can't imagine the necessity for shaving one's dog. In that time period, that seems like an awful lot of work. Maybe it has something to do with hunting, or I don't know. I just think it would be...
Well, terriers, like, don't they say they're dogs that go after, like, vermin, right? Like, rats and smaller animals, and they're not hunting dogs. But they'll go after things and, like, shake it to death, right? They'll get it, like, when they get their toy, they just shake it with their heads, right?
I don't... I'm not an expert on that. And the other shot we got was, I believe, a shot from the Tinchel. It looks like we have Claire on the ground with where we're all assuming is Geordi and Dougal, as Geordi is bidding a fond adieu to this world, while everyone in the background is kind of milling about and hanging out. And there's one, I'm assuming, crew member in a bright red coat, which is not hunting appropriate.
And other crew members, just one in red.
Yeah.
And it does, we know this is Claire, her back to us. Geordi lying down, and then Dougal kind of leaning back a bit. But it's funny, I didn't notice before, are those look like modern boots on Geordi? My guess is maybe the camera was looking at his upper half and not doing the bottom half. Well, I guess they could, because Dougal's kind of look, I guess they look similar to Dougal, so that they could be authentic-ish. But they have his heels resting on some slab that I don't think is natural to the forest.
Probably not.
So yeah, it's definitely a scene or a still from the Tinchel.
We got another Speak Outlander, a new one. This one kind of showed up and then disappeared and then came back, but it featured the McKenzie brothers, sans cookie, and in full costume. And the word of the week is Tullachard, something like that. Sorry, Agav, I was only half paying attention. I'm used to them screaming it as a war cry, which sounds a lot like to the car. But it was nice to see them in costume, because up until now we don't see them in costume on film very often. This week we also got our next newsletter from Stars, basically talking about recreating the 1700s. They did one recently on recreating the 40s, and this one, most recent, is recreating the 1700s. And it looks like all you need to recreate the 1700s is a lot of mud. They also need to put fur and feathers on their food.
That was gross.
I'm like, bugger. I don't know how anyone can find that appetizing. I mean, I guess if you're hungry enough. We also got news from Recorded Books that Davina Porter has finished recording Written in My Own Heart's Blood. You think that took longer than the ones before? You think it took longer than the 2 weeks it took to do the last one?
We don't know that it took her 2 weeks to do the last one. We know that she said A Breath of Snow and Ashes, which was really long. I believe she said she did in 2 weeks, and that was not the way to do it. She said because of either scheduling set and they couldn't change it or plans made, I think she said she was going on vacation or something, they had to do it quickly, and it was a big job. So I don't think 2 weeks is the norm.
Oh, okay.
Not because it doesn't take 2 weeks. I think you can do it back to back, but she likes rest and to prep the next section. But I think it's not that it physically couldn't be done. I think that it's that she wants to be fresh.
I wonder how many hours it's going to be.
Oh, you could only imagine.
I'll find out. I will find out for sure.
I thought you meant how many hours it took her.
Oh, no. I mean how many hours the actual book will be, the audiobook. And lastly, we also got a new cover. Diana actually posted this. They've created, I guess, a new edition of the book that is going to be in trade paperback and regular paperback. That's a tie-in with the Star series that actually has an image from the Star series on the cover, which is very exciting. It's actually a good shot. I really like this photo. I liked it when they released it for... What was that? Was that a trailer? Either that or a promo shot. It was a promo shot. It's a good one to use.
It's an interesting choice, I will say that. And from what I understand, I think she said on CompuServe, Diana did choose the shot, but she didn't choose out of a million. She chose out of four. So this was her choice out of four. It's not to say there wouldn't have been anything that she wouldn't have liked differently, but out of the four she was given, this is what she chose.
Well, I like it. Good job, Diana, as always.
I think it's an interesting... Definitely not a romantic cover. I mean, except the fact that they're a man and a woman together.
Sharing a kilt.
Sharing, yeah.
I mean, it's not a Fabio romance novel cover by any means.
No. And they're dirty and they're wet, and it's not a very romantic picture, which I like.
And you can tell it's the 1700s because they're covered in mud.
And they brought all the mud in. Yes.
Anyway, that wraps up announcements. So on this week's Adventures in Whiskey Tasting, we are featuring a recently priced bottle of whiskey. I think it was like $30 for the bottle. It's called William Grant's. This is a blended Scotch whiskey. It says, independent family distillers for five generations, mature, blended, and bottled by William Grant & Sons Limited, Dufftown, Banffshire, Scotland. And it's estimated 1887.
And established.
Estimated, established, whatever. EST. And this bottle doesn't have nearly the flowery language that the Glenlivet had, but I imagine... Well, that's what it said. But I imagine they think their whiskey stands for itself. So we've poured a little teeny tiny bit. I don't know what to expect from this because it doesn't have all the flowery language telling me what I was supposed to find when I drink it. So let's see.
Okay, do a smell first. What do you think? You already made a face.
I know. It just... Oh, I don't like it.
To me, it smells sweet.
Okay.
It doesn't smell peaty, mossy, ashy, smoky.
No, it does not. I would agree with you. It did not smell like those things.
It smells strong. It kicks you in the nose. Kicks you in the face.
Yeah. It reminds me of like a bourbon, which is a sweeter kind of whiskey. I don't care for bourbon either, for the record, but...
Try it.
It's closer.
I would take a sip.
It smells... Okay. You take a sip.
I'll wait for you, because we'll do it at different times.
That's just not fair.
It is totally fair. You need to be able to get my full reaction, and I need to be able to get your full reaction.
All right.
If we do it together, I might spit the whiskey out.
Why would you do that? You would never do that. Why would you waste whiskey?
Well, I try to spit it back in the glass, but I wouldn't want to waste it, but if you make me laugh, it'll happen.
Okay. Shh. Okay. Oh. Uh-oh. No. No.
Okay, sorry. That's not a winner either.
No.
We're still looking. We have received several suggestions, which we have not had time to pursue yet. We can do this even once the show's here. We can always talk about, heck, it's our show and it's Outlander, Scotland related, so we can do a whiskey tasting at any time. But we're trying to do it right now for the National Scotland's National Whiskey Month. Yeah. Okay, so let me try this.
Okay.
I don't like it as much as the Glenlivet.
Right.
I don't like it as much as that. In the same vein as the Glenlivet, it's sweet-ish. Glenlivet. And then I will say, the aftertaste, it's not just like a burn, like, oh, it's I want to say bright. You know what I mean? It's strong, mm-hmm. right? That's with any whiskey. It almost feels like my throat is scratchy.
And that's because they put knives in the bottle.
Oh, yeah.
Rocks. There are little tiny rocks.
No, but it doesn't...
It's part of the peaty flavor.
It's not a... There's no peaty in this.
I know.
That I can tell. I mean, we didn't...
It's blended. There could be a blend of there and there.
Oh, that's
I don't know.
True. But it doesn't smell... It doesn't make me want to gag. Because those, I will taste them if it's a tasting, but I do not choose to drink them as a rule. This, I would choose Glenlivet over this any day. But... The Glenlivet, sorry.
The Glenlivet.
But this is not, it's not bad, it's just, it leaves a little bit of a scratch in my throat, and my voice is not raspy.
No.
Okay, I'll finish it, 1 second.
You want to finish mine?
Mm-mm.
Why did you pour so much?
Sorry, it came.
Well, here's my...
I poured you very little, you hush.
You think? Oh, okay. That's like a whole sip. Here's my thought process on on whiskey is that... For the most part, the two that we've tried, on air, on air, have been abrasive in my mouth. But, like, the after effect or whatever, what's left in my mouth afterwards is a little sweet and kind of pleasant, but I don't know that it was worse. I don't know that it was worth the burning and pain of having it in my mouth.
So far, the Glenlivet was worth any pain you may have felt. Well, I can't speak for you, but for me, it didn't hurt. It was definitely strong. All whiskeys had that punch, definitely, because it's flaming alcohol. But the liquid fire. But it doesn't... It was so... I mean, it was so smooth. It was so smooth.
The Glenlivet?
Yes. Okay. And this one just... you know, it'd be interesting if that's an effect. Like you said, we don't know what else is in there.
Right.
It's not, quote-unquote, pure. I mean, it's very nice. It's not bad. It's just, in my very limited, or somewhat limited experience with different types of, different flavors and different types of whiskey, it's, I'm pretty sure I prefer the single malts the most. But so far.
I don't really have an opinion on that. And I don't think I'm qualified. All right. Enough of the whiskey. On to this week's read-along. So this week, we are covering...
one chapter! Thank goodness!
One chapter, but this is the beginning of Section 7, isn't it? The Search?
I think Part 7.
Part 7, The Search? And also the end of Part 7.
I know. Wait, I was doing the audiobook first before I'd read it, and the end, I'm like, at the end of it, I heard Davina's voice say, Part 7... Chapter 35. I was like, wait, didn't we just start part 6?
Right. So, the end of part 6, we're moving on to part 7, or this is the end of part 7. Anyway, chapter 34, entitled Dougal's Story.
And we don't start out with Dougal, which no, I know when I reread this.
It's misleading.
For the first time in a little bit. The chapter begins with Claire lamenting the lack of modern modes of mass communication.
And she's totally right.
Of course.
This must have been so difficult.
And she doesn't even have email or internet.
No, she's... Well,
when she was born, none of them have it. No, I mean, when she was in the 40s.
I mean, they just had telephones. I mean, that's about it. That
and newspapers.
Well, I mean, they had newspapers, but I mean...
They had telegraph.
They did, but I mean, in that...
That was a little bit...
In that large of an area of space that he could have been in, I mean, the odds of them being able to get a newspaper from, like, Edinburgh all the way to Inverness...
Yeah, no.
...were, you know, slim to none.
She says that it usually takes several weeks for someone to find out what they need to, with communication being basically mouth-to-mouth.
Right.
Human-to-human.
Or mouth-to-mouth.
Oh, that
word of
mouth-to-ear?
Word of mouth.
Oh, Lord have mercy. She thinks about which direction he, meaning Jamie, may have traveled in. Definitely not Lallybroch, and not north toward the Mackenzie lands, but maybe toward Bowley. Sorry, I did this wrong before, too. It's Bewley.
That's what I was saying. I was like, isn't it Bewley?
It's Bewley, and I have said this before. It's the reason I said Bowley is, first of all, because it does have French roots. It's from Beaulieu, beautiful place, and it became Bowley, but not Bowley. It's Bewley, so I'm sorry. Speaking French or knowing French can be a hindrance in speaking English.
Which is why I had no difficulty saying Bewley.
And it's there's like the whiskey talking.
Okay. See, I look at it and I see it's like beauty, only an L instead of the T.
I see Bo, like a boy.
Okay.
A boy's name.
I mean, I can see what you're doing, but that's not where I would go.
Oh, even wow. Though he may go toward Bewley.
Oh my gosh.
Next time we have to do the whiskey afterwards.
Glad to tell
even
you.
Even though he may be going toward Bewley.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is less than a shot. Less than a shot.
Oh my gosh, not even half a shot.
And this is how she is, with less than a shot.
No. But then she recognizes that the watch could also have figured that out. Mm. If she could figure it out, then they could have as well. They decide to let Jamie find them. And he says, I think this is Myrta, says that they will travel around, her as a healer and somewhat of a fortune teller, and this way word will spread that a healer was traveling around, there weren't many. While she was working her healing magic, Myrta would openly describe how they were on the way to Bowley. I think it's...
Bewley.
Oh my god! I'm never gonna cure myself of this! Myrta would sing while she kept the money. Myrta taught Claire some of his songs, and he tells her she has a decent voice. Claire makes her, quote, debut as a singer and fortune teller that night at Limerie. I'm guessing it's called, pronounced Limerie.
But I think it's important to point out that here is one of those times where that random skill she picked up right before she went through the stones rears its head.
Singing?
No, the fortune telling.
I was wondering where this is. Got it. She knows that they really are doing rather well and that people are beginning to come out of their homes to see them as they arrive in new places, in new villages. She jokingly says, "Too bad there's no theater anywhere near. We could do a proper music hall turn. Magical Murta and his glamorous assistant Gladys."
If there's a name that's ever been invented that is less glamorous than Gladys, I have not seen it yet.
I think she was trying to go for alliteration.
I'm sure she
was. Glugla.
Gluglu.
Glamorous Gladys.
Uh-huh.
Outside Belladrum, they met up with some real gypsies. Murta reminds her to be cautious and not to turn her back on anyone, and takes her purse for her. And I wrote in caps, this whole gypsy scene will be a great scene. I hope they keep it. I
mean, dialogue, except for between her and Murta. For the most part, it'll be charades.
No, they can have, the communication will be, but they can talk to each other. The gypsies will be making noise, and they'll be making noise. It'll be fine.
Just saying.
I had totally forgotten about the gypsies.
How could you forget the gypsies?
Because I did. Because they spoke very little English or Gaelic, communication was predominantly in gestures, and some language, Claire says, that was related to French. They had dinner, and Claire is so full, she can barely sing. I ate until my sides creaked. I could barely muster breath to sing, but I did my best, humming along the difficult parts and leaving Murta to carry the tunes. I love this. Then a gypsy performs, accompanied by a fiddle, a wailing lament, she calls it, and a little girl of about 8 played the tambourine as well.
Oh, but I love the way she said it. She said, she played the tambourine. Where is it?
It says, "Her performance was punctuated by the crashing of a tambourine wielded with some gravity by a little girl of about 8. I see her very seriously banging on that tambourine.
He told them very plainly, this is Murta, he told the gypsies as well as he could, whom they were looking for, Jamie, and he described him. The leader of the gypsies pantomimed that they would send a messenger if they found out anything about him. They take their leave, friendly-like, but then ride like bats out of hell once they're with the horses, because you never know, they are roving gypsies and...
But I like that they went out of their way to show them that they had no money. Because he took money out of my little purse, but I want you to see that I'm giving you almost everything I have.
And then they rode like bats out of hell once they were with the horses, and then they dipped into some vegetation before going back to the road. Then a messenger comes, 2 days later. A gypsy man found them in a tavern and was insistent that only Claire follow him. He leads her to a cave where guess who is waiting? Claire does think she might see Jamie, but quickly realizes it be Dougal.
It is definitely Dougal.
The cave has lots of booty in it, or of whatever sort.
Booty! You gonna bring it, Graham?
She couldn't tell what it was, but she knew it wasn't Dougal alone, working himself, that had all of that there. He was definitely working with someone. He had to have been. Dougal tells her that Jamie is alive, captured on the road, recognized by a soldier. He has been tried and found guilty and will be hanged soon. He is a prisoner in Wentworth. Claire, at least, has a target and a mission then. Her mission up until this point was to find him. That's why it's the search. And now, once she knows where he's at, the next part is to, okay, she's like, I'm not happy. It's devastating, but she knows that what she has to do is to attempt a rescue. She puts her mind to the next step. We'd better get moving then. Dougal says there's nothing they can do, and he looks at her with grief and sympathy. And she argues with him, there must be. You said he was alive. Doesn't someone in one of the books say that as long as there's life, there's hope? It was part of one, at least one of, if not a theme in this series. Claire is convinced that Dougal doesn't want to risk any of his men, and all she can see is that they need to at least try a rescue.
She's convinced he told her.
Yeah. Well,
he told her it was a fool. He told her that all he would do is, and he said that Jamie himself wouldn't want him to waste his men.
And that's what I'm coming up to. When Claire fights with him, he puts his arms around her and pulls her tight to him, and for the first time uses her first name. I didn't remember that he had never called her Claire, but maybe he just never used a name with her. Honestly, I think he's right that Jamie, even though we know he says this, but I think he's right. I don't think Jamie would want him to throw away good men on a fool's errand.
I agree. I don't think that he wants to die either.
No.
And I think that if it can be managed, he definitely wants to be rescued. But if it is a fool's errand, he wouldn't want people to die on his behalf. For sure.
Dougal tries to comfort her and tells her he'll take her to his house and she'll be safe there. And that sets Claire off. She remembers what Jamie had told her about Lallybroch and it falling to his mother should his father die. And if Jamie died, it would fall to Claire. And marrying Claire would be one way to keep the property, either to himself or in the family at least. And Dougal is shocked by this, and he swears, St. Agnes! And I don't know why, but that made me laugh. You're looking for a JC, or Saints, God's Teeth, or the fun one in Spartacus was Jupiter's Cock. It was the big one. It was very funny. So Claire asks Dougal if it was
him. Jupiter's Cock was the big one?
Summer. Okay, going on. It was a popular saying in that show by the Romans. Claire asks Dougal if it was him that attacked Jamie near the border the year before, and he says it was one of three men, all outlaws, two of whom were now dead, and the other in prison. He starts in with, Claire, my Claire, and he goes for seduction. I have to say, before I read it, I listened to Davina first, and when I heard, because it's still Davina, still the same person reading Jamie's voice and Dougal's voice, even Dougal's different than Jamie, mm-hmm. to hear it with that Scottish accent, it just reminds you of Jamie, mm-hmm. because he's the only one, up till now, who has said her name with tenderness and all of that. And so to hear it is really a little odd.
Well, it's important to point out that he's tried reason. Reason was his first thing he tried, and now he's trying for seduction. So he's
no. So he says he burns for her and that he's wanted her since...
He may very well have. He did. I don't think he's lying. Make out with her at the gathering.
Make out. He Frenched her one, but I don't know if he... Oh, I'm made out. Did he try and cop a feel?
I don't remember.
Okay, so let's not say that then. He says he burns for her and that he's wanted her since the night of the gathering. Of course, Dougal, when you forced yourself upon her. He says he would have wed her and saved her from Randall, quote, on the spot, if he'd been a free man. He says that he could never abandon Jamie, the closest thing he has to a son. And she snaps back with, not quite. There's your real son, or perhaps two by now. She tells him she knows who Hamish's real father is, and she knows she's right by watching his face. So all that practice as a fortune teller has helped. She goes on and on. This woman just doesn't stop. She thinks it might be her weapon with him, and it is. She mentions Colm and how he must know, but how he must have thought it was Jamie for a while, Hamish's father. She brings up Galis and how she must have been planted with the idea of Jamie by Dougal regarding Hamish's parentage. And Dougal says, the witch is dead. And he, quote, burnt, stuck feet first in a barrel of pitch and heaped about with dry peat, bound to a stake and lit like a torch, sent to the devil in a pillar of flame under the branches of a rowan tree. Although he said it with a certain tone, Claire recognizes that it was almost said angrily toward himself, almost as almost blaming for his role in the whole thing. So Dougal does have, not only suffers, Dougal is sad in some way. He feels the loss of her.
We learn, obviously liked her at least a little bit.
Well, yeah, at least in some way. We learned the baby boy was taken to a good home. She lets off at him and calls him disloyal in many things. Dougal is affronted at the thought of being disloyal to his brother. Then she realizes that the two brothers had been in on it together. In on everything. All along.
Yeah.
And this is so much wider and further and deeper than she could have ever thought. Letitia had been willing enough, he says. Letitia being Colm's wife. Mm-hmm. The lady of Leoch. Though he calls it a boring damn job trying to get her with child. And he says, I'd as soon swive a warm bowl of milk pudding.
Burn. Gross.
Oh, gosh. But he wasn't that mean to say that to Colm. And he told Colm that Letitia was tender and sweet, all a man could want in a woman. He says of Claire, he'd not call her tender and sweet, but definitely all that a man could want, .. looking over her lasciviously. He looks her up and down and appraises her and says he might yet have another son, legitimate this time. Though it's true she might be barren, and he says the property, meaning Lallybroch, is worth it. And I'm like, this is like, what, the third person? The third time at least that people are totally, I understand it's the times. And they've been married for a bit. But there's still poor Claire in her midsection.
Well,
I mean, bad.
It's true, but the worth of a wife a lot of times in that time period was whether or not she could produce children.
Well, all the time, yeah. So Myrta shows up, pistols in hand, one aimed at Dougal. This is great. Unless you mean to accept that last proposal here and now, I'd suggest you leave. And if you do mean to accept it, then I'll leave. I love Myrta. And we also learn that he had sent Rupert off to get a case of rum, supposedly for Dougal. So they take Dougal's money, the money he has on him. But Dougal says they may not have his men. She thinks about it and asks, can we speak to your men? If they will come willingly, if any of them will come, then fine. If not, we'll give you back the purse and we'll leave. So they did end up with 5 men and the purse. And they end up with Rupert, John Whitlow, Willie McMurty, and the twin brothers, Rufus and Geordie Coulter. And Rupert had swayed the others with a, aye, lass, why not? I like Rupert too.
Yeah.
So Wentworth was 35 miles away. Claire mentions 30 minutes by a fast car. 2 days by horseback. And to stay awake and upright on the horse, she keeps her mind occupied by the conversation she had with Dougal and tries to keep off of any thought of Jamie. Dougal's last words to her had been to relay a message from Galus, from the witch, he says. 2 things she wanted him to tell her. 1, quote, I think it is possible, but I do not know. 2, the numbers in order, 1, 9, 6, and 7. Claire tells Dougal they mean nothing to her, but of course it did. She thinks it was possible, Galus meant, she thinks it was possible to go back through the stones, but she wasn't sure. And that she had disappeared in 1967. Wow, that just makes you think. 67, back to the same exact time that Claire had left in 45?
She'd been established back there for a good long time. At least a few years if she was already
married. Yeah, so she went back further. So Claire went back 204 years or so.
Yeah.
But Galus went back 220-something years?
Yeah.
So,
we know why, because we've read the further books, but...
Oh, no, we know why she went back as far, but...
We know how, too, because we've read the further books,
because she's done research. Okay. Claire has some very interesting thoughts, and I can definitely see how it would have brought even more to the story, even more trouble to the story. She says, it's too bad that she hadn't seen the vaccination mark earlier, so they could have spoken more about this topic, but at the same time, if they had, and she could have gotten help... Would she have gone back to the stones and left Jamie? So that is a huge can of worms. They arrive at Wentworth, and she describes the building as a gigantic cube of greenish argyle granite. Seeing the magnificent fortress, she begins to feel some doubts and says, what if we can't do it? And Myrta, ever the pragmatist, repeats what Dougal had promised them earlier. Then Dougal will bury us with him, one on either side. Come on, there's work to be done.
It's good to have a clansman willing to do pretty much anything to save your fellow clansman.
What, Myrta?
Yeah.
I'm thinking about Dougal. I'm like, no.
No, he's super...
Well, Dougal's just willing to bury them. But at least he'll do that. If she dies, who would get Lallybroch? Well, probably the sister. It would stay with Jenny, probably.
Probably. Because they don't have an heir.
That's true. That's true. And then Ian.
And a woman can't hold it. That was part of... They went over that. That the Mackenzie brothers were really specific about when they were writing up the marriage contract, that a woman could hold Lallybroch on her own in case something happened to Brian, that it would stay in their hands. But it would work against them, because Jenny could get it.
So it was a loaded chapter with a lot of things we find out, but it wasn't overly long.
No.
That was kind of nice.
No, but like anything else, it's hard to put down at this point in the book, because it's just a steamroller to the end.
I know. It just... Ugh. Starting with Lallybroch, to me, it goes just... Getting back to... No, circle back. Starting with the witch trial.
Mm.
That is when my gut is grabbed, and from there on out, I don't know if I put the book down. The first time I read it, I don't remember putting the book down between that part and the end.
Yeah, no, I think once I reached those points, it was like up all night reading.
Exactly.
And that wraps up the read-along for this week. Next week,
we're starting part 7, Sanctuary, chapter 35, Wentworth Prison. Into the depths.
Into the fortress.
Read along and join us back.
As always, thank you so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at @OutlanderPod. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/OutlanderPod. Or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.
Last night, that my young